And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Interfered here and declare your independence from me, Ernest Hancock, here in, where the hell am I? It's at the docks, I'm sorry, what, Donna? Sault Ste. Marie, up between Lake Superior and Lake, the other one. And it's going to be, now, who knows about this? Mr. Robert Anderson is on the phone. We're going to get caught up and yak about a bunch of stuff, but he's been up here before. And this morning I just took the drone. I tell you, Bob, this Mavic Air 2 drone, you know, we used to think, man, if they had a drone that did this and did that and wasn't that big and was tight and strong and went a long ways and had good and could and got, it does everything. It is just and simple as heck. Boom, I go out, unfold it, boom, go over. It's like 2 miles away, and I take a picture from the air and zoom down and go and look at the ships. I don't even have to go anymore. I'm good, you know? But, you know, tell me about where I'm at and what this place is known for.
Well, Sault Ste. Marie, it's the hometown of, you know, a good friend of mine I've known since, you know, my early, my late teens. We met when I was in the Navy, first went in, my friend Lon Weber. And, you know, he's been activist with us on and off.
We know Lon well. He's a good friend.
So he's, him and his ex, they were born and raised there. And, so we used to go up there all the time and visit. And it's a beautiful place in the state. You know, I mean, Michigan's divided kind of up into those, kind of divided into two states. And the people in the Upper Peninsula kind of look at themselves almost as a separate autonomous area, really.
You know, that's one thing I didn't really realize, get the geography right. I thought it was more connected to Canada. It's not. It's Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin or Minnesota. Which one is it?
Minnesota, I believe.
Minnesota. So you go.
I think it touches Wisconsin, too. I'd have to get a map out. But, I mean, you got Duluth all the way over there, which is, you know, one of the big, you know, shipping ports for the old the iron ore that used to come down. I mean, that whole area used to be they'd mine the iron ore over there in Duluth and bring it across down through the canals and everything like that and down through the locks and the rivers over to all the steel mills that were over in Ohio and all that area for, you know, making the steel for the car plants in Detroit. And I mean, that whole, the lakes were a big, or still are, I'm sure, a big, transportation hub. That's why it's all U.S. Army Corps of Engineer, government, you know, built up kind of, you know.
What's like the lake below Superior? When you go through the locks here, it's what's that lake?
It's actually, well, it's flowing into Lake Huron, I believe, is the lake. But you're really going into, I can't remember what the name of the river is. Maybe it's the Sault Ste. Marie River. I'm not quite sure, but it's actually really a river. It's just really wide right there, but it goes down and dumps in, I don't know how many miles down. It's not a long ways into the upper part of Lake Huron.
Yeah, see, I thought, you know, I never even thought of it. I'm freaking Arizona, man. What do I know? Okay, Donna's got it here. It goes from Lake Superior, and then it splits and goes into Lake Michigan or Lake Huron. And then at the bottom of Huron, it goes Lake Erie and then Ontario. Okay, I thought Erie was the last lake. I guess it's Ontario. Okay, so, yeah, this is a good graphic. Put this up on the site so everybody knows what the hell we're talking about. We are with Sault Ste. Marie is where we're at right now, and we went to Whitefish Point to where the museum. Oh, we got to talk about that. We'll talk about that. But the Mackinac Island is the island. And now that connects into, this is Minnesota or Wisconsin. Anyway, so so Michigan is really like part of another landmass, you know, and the upper part. So I can see how they're separate. Now, the locks, what I didn't realize is I go, why do they got locks? All the lakes that connect, right? No, they're waterfalls. And they took out, there are different levels of lake, you know. So, you know, what's the difference in some of them, you think?
Well, you know, you look at Niagara Falls, you know. I mean, they got locks that go around Niagara Falls because that's between, I believe, what is it, Ontario and Erie.
Oh, really? There's locks around Niagara Falls? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to find out all kinds of stuff on this trip, man. We're going to learn about America.
Yeah, so, I mean, you look at the height of Niagara Falls, that's a pretty significant, you know, step. And they bring ships up, pretty good-sized ships up and down.
Really? The ships, it's one of the unique things about the ships. It seems like the ships are all the same type. They're just like the Edmund Fitzgerald was just a really big one of them. But they're just this long, you know, got a front and a back, and it's just a long, almost like an oil tanker.
Yeah, well, that's what they are. They're all bulk carriers. They used to carry bauxite, I think is what it was. Well, that's aluminum, I think. Just iron ore pellets. They, like I say, they go over to, you know, I believe it's Duluth is where the big one of the big loading places are for the iron ore that they bring over.
Well, where's this iron ore come from? What are we talking about? Rust? No, dirt?
There's major deposits of iron ore over, the Duluth area.
Still? I mean, they just keep, I mean, yeah, it's like no, mountains of iron?
I believe so. I'd have to, you know, without speaking on any authority, I'd have to do some look into it. But, yeah, they still move. And add in a lot of grain. A lot of grain would come down there because you got basically the whole, the breadbasket of the upper, you know, central part of the country where they grow a lot of wheat and corn and all that stuff. A lot of that was all done by these bulk carriers. You know, that's why you say the Edmund Fitzgerald with a load of iron ore. So most of those ships were specifically designed to be able to go through the locks. So they have to be a certain width and a certain length.
And some of them
are, like you say, they maximize transportation. They fit in there with like a shoehorn. So, I mean, as big as those locks are, those ships are huge. Some of them, they can't get out. I believe some of the locks on the lower lakes are so small that the ships, I mean, it isn't like they could take them all the way out to the ocean down the St. Lawrence. I believe some of those ships, they'll never leave the lakes. They're lake freighters. That's the only place.
You know, that's one thing that's interesting. A lot of people, you get all the way over to Minnesota over here in Canada, and it can come out New York, right? I mean, it goes to the St. Lawrence Seaway, empties into what, the Hudson?
No. St. Lawrence Seaway goes all the way to the Atlantic, like over in Nova Scotia above Maine. You go down.
Oh, it doesn't even. So Huron, I mean, the Hudson River that goes up through New York City in there, it doesn't connect into the St. Lawrence Seaway at all?
Only by canal.
Okay.
Wasn't natural. That was the Erie Canal. In fact, there's a lot of people. I can't remember. I always get it mixed up. It's not the Great Circle Road or it's the Great Something. Well, you can actually take a boat. And there's people that do this. They live on the
Intercoastal Highway.
Yeah, and they'll go up the Intercoastal Highway, and they'll either go up the Hudson and across the Erie Canal, or they'll go all the way up and down the St. Lawrence through the Great Lakes, and then there's a Chicago Ship Canal, I think it is, where you can basically get out of the lakes and go into the upper Mississippi and come all the way down the Mississippi and out into the Gulf and around Florida and start all over again. And there's people that do that. They live on their boats, and there's, you know, it's kind of like the escapees with their RVs. These people all know each other, and they do it for years, and there's a whole little clan of folks that's all they do is they follow the warm weather on their boats.
Could be worse things to do. Okay. So, yeah, we're learning about this Great Lake. I mean, I learned it in school and everything. They spent, I don't know, a week and a half on it or something, if that, over six. You never really learn anything. You just get a little bit of something. But I knew that they were connected. I remember that there were locks built. It just never really dawned on me that there were such different elevations. And when we come back, we'll talk about there's a spillway over a big wide area where I guess it's just natural flow. We'll find out what that's about. Bob Anderson, go explain it to us when we come back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Hey, I don't need no stinking roads. You know, one thing is that I might not need any locks or seaways either. It gets, they're going to be kind of cool, man. Future's going to be very nice. We'll have the same problems like we always do. You know, it's just somebody wanting to be in charge of something. And here are the locks at Sault Ste. Marie, I guess what you call it. The locks here, they're split between the United States and Canada. Those damn Canucks. We're going to have to invade them or something, you know? Has there been any kind of consternation between U.S. and Canada? We get along pretty good on the Great Lakes, Bob.
I think they get along pretty good. I mean, I think there's some ouch, quit it now and then about water levels in the lake or, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, because, I mean, the whole downflow, you take all the, you know, the water that starts up at, you know, the upper Gitche-Gumee eventually flows down all the way to the ocean out in the Atlantic. And there's powerhouses and lake levels and canals. And, you know, so I'm sure there's, you know, some major.
You know, my new word, Donna, like, you know, she's having to hear a lot, you know, is, Gitche-Gumee. like saying it. The overflow, the spillover, you have like four locks that take up, you know, the southern side of the, or the U.S. side, the western side, whatever it is, you know, of the river, of the, between the two lakes there. And then on the Canadian side, it seems like they don't have locks, it's just a big spillway. And so it's probably, gosh, almost a half mile wide or a quarter mile wide or something. I couldn't really tell from the drone. But, you know, it's just a big river that kind of flows at a gradual angle. So, you know, it's like the biggest water slide I ever saw. So, you know, what's that about?
Yeah, I you know, that's how they, as odd as it sounds, that's how they control the level of the Lake Superior. To make sure they got enough
water.
That's
a big, giant freshwater ocean. How are they controlling that? And this spigot they got here ain't going to control nothing. I'm just.
Yeah, you would think, but, you know, I mean, that's kind of what it's for. It keeps the lake level high enough because, you know, there's actually a powerhouse in Sault Ste. Marie. You can walk down and you got, you know, you can watch the canal. There's a little canal that runs through the town, and it runs basically electric turbines, water turbines for generating power. As well as they need to keep the level of the lakes a certain height so that they can, you know, the ships can get, yeah, have enough draft to get into the canals.
Well, this is kind of cool. You know, one thing, it is kind of, because where we're at is an RV park right downtown. I mean, it's like, I don't know, less than a mile from the locks, just right on the lake. It's like it used to be a dock or something, and they just, you know, built an RV park here. So it's kind of cool. And it's really cheap. It was only like $29 a night or something. I thought, you know, it'd be $1 billion. I think we're probably out of the season. It hit September now because it is kind of, it's getting like 40 degree weather at night up here. How hot is it there in Phoenix, Bob?
It's about 103 today. We finally had some rain come in the other day and it's kind of cooled everything off, but it's going to, you know, there's not a cloud to be seen in the sky. So I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be rather chilly in the low hundreds to this today, but
I know a lot of people, they go 103, hey, nothing, man.
Yeah, 103 is like woohoo, I'm gonna, you know, get the Parker out kind of thing.
Well, it's not bad. It's been. When it starts feeling kind of damn when it's above 105, 107, up to, you know, you're in the 90s, man, you're just chilling weather, you know. But when it starts getting over 110, 115, that kind of sucks. Didn't you have like a big string of days over 110 or something?
That's what they're telling, you know, I had, you know, I don't go look because, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's so hot. And I'm like, hey, it's called Arizona, folks. Get used to it. After you've been here a while, you just kind of like, you know, let that roll off or off your back when you hear people complaining about the heat. But they say we actually set a record for the most continuous days above 110 degrees or something like that. Like, not only did we break the record, we like smashed the record, and it was like, well, you know, yeah, it's hot.
How many days? What are we talking about? You know, 10?
Yeah, I think it was like 50.
50 days above 110. 50 days. It's like living on Venus. I mean,
yeah, you know, Yeah, I always tell people it's kind of akin, having grown up back in the Northeast or, you know, in the grid this cold weather, it's just, you know, it's just the opposite. You know, there's times in the wintertime where, you know, you go outside, you go to your car, you go to wherever the store you are, you come back, you get out of your car, go in your house, and you really don't do much outside because it's just freaking cold.
Well, that's the same thing, you know, here.
Here, it's just hot. You know, it's like you spend a couple of months where you're just kind of cabin feverish because you're not going outside because it's, you know, you'll melt lead on the ground.
Yeah, that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize. In Arizona, it's once it hits about May, everything, like in the wintertime, you wear gloves all the time, or some people do, I did, you know, because it's cold. In Arizona, you're wearing gloves because everything's nuclear hot. That's why we always buy, you know, I always got white cars. My dad was big on that. No, you get white, man. That's just the way it is. And you lean up on a car, you do work outside, you're working with metal or a trailer or farm equipment or anything. You have to have gloves because everything you touch is, you know, like when you go to a Mexican restaurant, now be careful, the plate's hot. You know, it's not like glowing red, oh, my God, outside in a Phoenix summer hot. I mean, you know, that's hot. So now you're getting into it's starting to get nice weather, and we're going to have to start heading more south. We got to get across to the Pacific Northwest here in a few weeks at the most, and we got the bus having a total engine rebuild. Yay. You know, but then we get a new engine. That'd be good.
Yeah, well, you know, one less thing you have to worry about going across across country. Did you find out if they can find you a new blower?
You know, we're talking about that. You know, getting the water cooling. It's just old. Everything's old on it. And I'm like, yeah, for another couple thousand, you know, just do it. Because we had a budget for this kind of stuff. I kind of figured it was going to happen anyway. But fortunately, the Detroit diesels are very popular. That's why Jay wanted us to get that, because they're easy to get parts for and fix, no matter how old. No. All right, fine. But we couldn't wait. We need to get on the road, man. This thing is a happening now. And that brings us to what we did at the, what do they call it? The Great Lakes Shipwreck Edmund Fitzgerald Memorial Museum.
Yeah, I think it's just the Great Lakes
thing.
Shipwreck Museum.
Shipwreck Museum.
The Fitzgerald was you know, one of the most famous ones, because it was one of the last ones. I don't think there's been, I'm sure there's been something lost on the lakes since then. But that was, you know, that was kind of like their Titanic. You know, they built the Fitzgerald, and it was at the time, I think, one of the largest ore carriers. And it was, you know, supposedly the, you know, the pride of the fleet, and, you know, modern shipbuilding, and, you know, all the other stuff that went along with it. And for them to lose that ship, it was pretty, you know, Mother Nature going, oh, yeah, you think so? You know, so that opened up a lot of people's eyes that a ship like that could still be, you know, put under by the lake.
Well, so, it was in the 50s sometime, and it went down in 75, 76. So it was that, you know, probably at least about 20 years old. So it'd been out there, you know, being all, you know, king of the boss of the walk. So, but there was a big storm, and Gordon Lightfoot's, you know, the wreck of Edmund Fitzgerald kind of describes the whole thing, you know, what happened. So we'll talk about our visit to the museum yesterday when we come back with Mr. Robert and Mr. Anderson in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Hi, a lot of things are happening. Donna and I, we went to the museum. And, you know, I got up early and did some droning around the cool lighthouse and on the beach and stuff and everything. That thing's awesome, man. It's going to really add a lot to the videos and stuff that we're doing. And once I get into it, it'll be daily. We'll put it in when we get back into the studio on the Love Bus. Then we have the live streaming and the video and so on. A lot of the stuff will make it part of the show every morning where I go out and here we are. You know, this is us camp. This is where Love Bus is today. You know, this is, you know, that kind of thing. And we're doing a lot of stuff on the Upper Michigan will be its own video. because there's a lot of history and stuff up here that we're kind of covering too. So it'll be an educational thing for the grandkids and everybody will dig it and all the signs that we did. Well, what we did is we did about 69 signs, you know, a bunch of big ones and a whole bunch of little ones. And we just blanketed Marquette, which is the biggest city or town in northern Upper Michigan. And we just blanketed the snot out of them, and they got it. Well, a bunch of them we were concerned when we got up to go to eat. A lot of them were gone, but then when we went into town and on Big Box Row and everything, they were still there, at least for the day that we were there. And then, of course, we have support first responders that say no mandatory shots, and with a big skull and crossbones, and had it all nice and, you know, yeah. And that stayed up on the chain link in front of the entrance to the hospital, you know, all day at least. So I'm going, all right. And then they had one right next to the fire station. And so we were, you know, strategic in what we did with that. So the town got a dose. Then we're like, okay, we're going to go up probably an hour and a half, a couple hours away to where the Great Lake Wreck Museum is, the big ships. We go there. It's a really nice place. It's on a point up there. We did some video droning and so on. We were the only ones there, a couple of cars. We were early. We did the show, so we're not done until noon. About 1 o'clock, we had to move once because we were in an employee parking lot and didn't know it. So we moved a little bit down the drive. So we had a place to park and did the show. We go in. Nope, you got to have a mask to buy FUD. Nope, you got to have a mask to go. Nope, you got to. Okay, it's going to be like that everywhere, right? Okay. So we took the time. We went back, and we got six two-sided signs that we made right there. You know, we just, you know, plop, that's, we got it set. You know, the Coroplast 18 by 24 or whatever it is, put it down. We have the stencils that Derek made. We put them on there, sprayed it, you know. And by the time we got done doing it, it was dry on one side, did the other side, and then we did them in pair, three pairs on both sides of the drive going into the museum. Boom, boom, boom. We had probably at least four different messages on there. Let me see your smile. Masks make me feel alone. Liberty wears no mask. And freedom's the answer. What's the question? So we did that on our way out. Took some drone footage up, pictures. Boom. We're on the way to the locks. I think we might do the same thing again. Okay? So we have enough material that we kept with us to be able to do this very kind of thing. So we spread across. It's just... and Bob and I know from the decades of us doing this kind of activism, these signs always have an impact. You hear about it later, you know. Yeah, you know, what do you got to say about them?
Well, I can guarantee you, you know, just knowing the signs that we've done down here is that, you know, all it takes is, you know, one Karen type of person to, like, she'll take a cell phone, or he'll, I guess, you know, could be a Ken, I guess, a cell phone picture, and they'll send it to, you know, somebody who means something, some political connected precinct committeeman or whatever.
They should be shot!
It will filter back up to they, them, those, and they'll be like, you know, and like I said, the sign only has to be there long enough for the one of the right people to take a picture of it, because they don't know. They're like, how many of these are? Where are they at? Who's doing it? You know, it just, you know, it messes with their head. It's kind of that X factor thing. They don't, they're scared of what they don't know. And you know, not to mention that, like I say, there's a lot of people go by. They see the whatever web page you're directing them to, and you know, you're spreading the word. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that probably know this whole mask thing is shenanigans, and. And when they go to argue with their Karen or Ken friends that, like, why don't you have your mask on? You hate us. You're going to kill us. You know, that kind of thing. They don't have anything to back up their, you know, they know it's in their gut that it's crap. But give them some verbal ammunition to be able to actually defend themselves on your web pages will, you know, give them a lot of benefit.
And yeah, no, Donna's working on it now. She's going back and getting some impact. The best stuff on Love Bus Liberty Tour. Yeah, because if you don't have the ammunition for the people, then what the hell are you doing it for? So Donna, get on that. You know?
Right.
So she's putting that those up there for when they go, they got the ammunition. Did you do your due diligence.com is kind of you know, one of the sponsors of this, and their whole thing is for healthcare professionals. So by the time when they go to, we get that all done. We just changing the domain over. Last night, GoDaddy and Donna were going at it. It's still going to be a little bit before that's fully transferred. But it's we need it under our control because they just can't keep up with the speed at which we do stuff. And I'm going, look, man, you guys are going to be weeks behind. You can't do it that way, man. It's got to be rocking. Taking care of that.
You got about 60 days. In about 60 days when the election happens, either this thing is going to miraculously disappear the day after the election, or it's going to turn into these brutal you shall edicts that you shall lock down, you shall do this, you shall do that. I mean,
no, it's going to mandatory vaccinations. That's the attempt. That's what this whole thing is about. The mask thing is just, you know, just our entrance into just being nice and kind of, because, you know, support first responders, that's where they're going to, you know, put the pressure on because they want to keep their job. We went through this with H1N1 in Phoenix in 2009, remember? You know, we saw coming. This is when the vaccine and vaccinations category in Freedom's Phoenix started. We did Freedom of Information Request stuff. We did a bunch of videos. We were embarrassing. We're and the governor. We're going down to Department of Health. We had Powell, our senior editor, was one of the managers at the Arizona Department of Health. He's one of their bio super DNA tech guys that finally just went out of hell with all y'all. And he left, retired, and became senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix. Don't think we don't know. We know exactly what's going on inside and who, what, why, and bad guys. So this is, finally they came. I got a call from a deputy director of the Arizona Department of Health at 7 o'clock at night one time. Okay, Ernie, we give. Here's the, you know, the link you want to make it stop. I mean, you know, I'm just going, wow, these guys. And that was when they decided to kind of pull back. That's when they go, yeah, now's not the time. You got Obama, and we got the WHO, and we got, you know, H1N1. We just weren't ready enough for the damn Ernies, okay? So they pulled back, and then they're getting all ready for what's going on now. We knew this was coming, and it's going to be mandated shots. So
yeah, for a disease that doesn't do hardly anything. It's crazy the way they've been able to manipulate the psychological warfare they've played on the people here to get them to buy into this thing that, you know, and then, you know, the CDC just changed their numbers in the dark of night, last Friday, of course they do it on a Friday, where they readjusted all their numbers that there's been less than 10,000 people nationwide that have died from the Rona, in, other than the fact that people that have already had like two or three of these other like morbidities. And they're all like, you know, 85
and
years old.
And you know that number's going to get, you know, changed too. I mean, that's what they could, most they could get, you know, kind of, well, you know, he wasn't hit by a bus.
Yeah, you got a lot of these governors that back in the East states. Well, I think Michigan was one of them. Like I say, that lady, she's got shit crazy, that one. I hope they get rid of her. I hope they learn their lesson. You know, you better be careful of what tin pot dictator you put in charge of yourself. But, all these guys, they deliberately, you know, well, that's speculation, that they deliberately seeded all these old folks' homes with them to clean the old folks out of there. You know, it's like, it's incredible the amount of stupidity or deliberate hustle.
Because they would do that, that'd be wrong.
Yeah, I'm still having, you know, tons of thousands of old people.
Now, we're going in the break. I can't hear you. Scott's already yelling.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Cover the secrets and expose the lies. You know, Bob and I have both been paying attention to South Dakota. You got I think she's probably GOP. You know, she's just a governor of South Dakota. You know, and they just go, I think we'll decline. They're Sweden of America. They just go, nah, we're good. We just tell the people what's up and what they say and kind of peace out and let me know how it works out. And things have been great. You know, for them, they just, you know, she's coming out smelling okay. Now, what happens is Sturgis. I've been up to Sturgis, I think it was like 10, 11, you know, it was after the Ron Paul Revolution. They had a lot of different, you know, kind of post events and so on. Remember, Russell Means was there, and Bad Narek, and myself, and some others, and a bunch of guys, and talk show hosts, and so on. Went to Sturgis for like a week-long event, and we all spoke, and they had a lot of different vendors and things. It was interesting. Then we took, and Blood, I mean, he's a talk show host from Austin, I think. We went to, he broke his leg, so I had to push him around in a wheelchair, and we went to Crazy Horse. Mount Rushmore, Crazy Horse, man, that was awesome. That kicked the crap out of Mount Rushmore, and that was the Native Americans going, oh, yeah? Well, we're going to take a whole Granite Mountain and put Crazy Horse up there. So you go there, and they have the following week after when we had the week of our thing was Sturgis, where all the motorcycle guys in, the Harleys and so on. Well, you're not going to tell a Harley guy to, you know, put on a mask or take off his mask. I mean, you know, a lot of times they're wearing them. You know, you're not going to tell them anything what to do. Well, they didn't even try. And what you hear in the media was all about, oh, these bikers, they didn't, you know, have, you know, protocols or whatever the hell. There weren't any. You know, in South Dakota, they're like, pace, man, we don't care, and Harley up. So, you know, what's been your impression of, you know, what is her name anyway? She's some, you know, good-looking babe, rival, the Michigan babe of, you know, communist versus not.
Yeah, no, she's been, she spoke at the convention, and they're running commercials, like, you know, regular on TV, like, come to South Dakota, we're, you know, we low taxes and lots of land, and it's a nice place to be, and business friendly. I mean, you know, she's really working it for her state, since she's got a little bit of limelight going on, and I think you're going to see her in the future, mover and shaker in the, you know, the Republican Party, you know, not that party politics means crap to me.
Yeah, I know, the Republican Party, you know, this week. I mean,
yeah, but you know, she seems to, like, say, she said she told the people of South Dakota, this is what we're up against, and this is how they're telling us we should probably deal with it. I leave it up to you to be smart, intelligent, free people, and live long and prosper, peace out. And so far, South Dakota's been doing just fine. And they don't have, you know, they're not in everybody's business, and they didn't shut nothing down, and basically the state's doing okay, and, you know, free people are being free. So,
Trump had this.
I might want to live.
You know, Trump, well, he's a visitor, have a summer place or something. You know, Trump had, it's a nice place. I've been through there. Trump got a new, you know, Dr. Fauci replacement, advisor medical, get him off the podium. See, I just know, you know, when knowing what we know, we're going to be talking to Dr. Judy Mikovits in the third hour today and get caught up on all that. And she was off on Fauci. Just boom, 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 boom. She kept saying his name. But I don't care about the name. It's the position. It's the shiny badge. You can name the badge, you know, whatever, him or something. Because it was kind of lost on me. Okay, this is Fauci guy. Who do I care? You know, no, he was head of the National Institute of Health and yada, 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 yada. Had the power of being able to put billions of dollars out into grants or this, or at least hundreds of lots of money, you know, in the pocket of Gates. And so if I understood the position or whatever more, and, you know, of course, if I read the books, you know more about that. But we got a case of her books, Plague of Corruption. So we got a case here, and one of the other guys, Rick, I think he got his own case for books. And so we got him here on the bus. Well, what we're going to do is make sure they get out. And I want to talk to Dr. Judy about this new guy that Trump got to replace him at the podium. So knowing what Dr. Judy had to say about Fauci, when Trump was putting him up on the podium all the time, that's just a prelude to, you're fired, okay? Well, it looks like, he's fired, or he's ignored. Yeah, he can have, and Fauci can say whatever you want him to say, whatever, and I don't care what he has to say. And you know, you may speak or we don't listen, and it doesn't matter. So now he's got this new guy that's going on about herd immunity, like what Sweden did. Well, it's kind of South Dakota.
Right, and I think, you know, not to defend the Donald, but, you know, I mean, nobody knew going in what this was really going to be. It took them a while to get their feet under them, not because they're stupid, just because nobody knew. And, of course, he was listening to the experts, and I think slowly but surely figured out the experts were, you know, full of crap. Excuse me. And so he's had to adjust. I think what's going to happen if he wins the election, the daft election, I think he's going to declare the national emergency due to Corona over, and then the governors won't have all this leverage behind them
right.
anymore. Because, and the reason he hasn't done it yet is I believe it's just not going to be politically expedient because they've got everybody in the nation so BS'd over what's really going on that Krudgel to beat him with between now and the election. But I think the day after the election, he's just going to go, no more national emergency. And that's going to be.
Oh, I know what he'll do, what I always wanted to do. This is what he's going to do. He's going to get up inauguration, you know, the microphone. Hell, he'd probably do it before then. He'd get up and he'd go, is this thing on? You're free. I'm going golfing. Let me get.
Yeah, the Rick Tompkins presidency. Yeah. You're all free. I'm going golfing.
That's good. Yeah, Rick Tompkins is a state chair of the Libertarian Party in Arizona, ran for president in 96 against Brown as the Libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party. You know, Brown, in retrospect, was pretty good. It's just the people surround him in the campaign, these people that, you know, the same people that did Joe Jurgensen this year, that she became the nominee rather than anybody else. I was supportive of Jacob Hornberger from Future Freedom Foundation, but they just went and did exactly what the Coke-a-Puss wanted them to. They went all woke and Black Lives Matter, and we're going to and mask up.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we're going, wow, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I was watching some interview that Trump was doing last night on one of the MILFs and NILFs, I guess is what it is. Mm-hmm. He was doing the interview with her, and he even said that he goes, hey, he goes with the Libertarian. He goes last time, and I can't remember who the candidate was last time. So they got like 4%. Yeah, and he goes, I don't think. You're going to see the Libertarian garner nearly anything
right.
in the ballot until you told me Joe Jorgens was running as like, who? And so, I mean, that's how much, they're getting. They're just feathering their pockets with whatever they can get out of the clean
election. She was VP with, I think, Brown in 2000 or something. It's a history. See, it's a club. It's just like, any other party. But if you go high enough on the left and the right side of the all CNI pyramid, the top controls both sides. Well, there's like independents and the left green, and then you got the libertarian. It's not just a two-sided pyramid. It's a four-sided pyramid. They just control everything.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong. I mean, God, man, wake up. I've been sitting here watching it happen. They know. Joe called me right before the national online convention, and I go, Joe, I can't help you. I mean, I need somebody to show some leadership. Who's going to say, screw you, and we're going to have an in-person convention. We're not going to follow all the crap and do what Nick Sarwark and came up through the Coke-a-Puss, which was national chair up until this last election. And then the guys that – I didn't even pay attention. I think the people that are – that's national chair now is a guy from Washington, D.C. that is married to another guy. I mean, I just – not that I give a crap, but that just tells you everything right there. These guys are so woke and so went left and so I lost interest, man. I'm done.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a libertarian party thing. It's a philosophical thing. It's a
declaration. Yeah, it always boils down to like everything, it always comes down. Who gets to hold the hand will become more important than the reason the organization created, and they're arguing over who can get the king of the Lilliputians.
King of the Lilliputians. All right, we're going into break. You can't hear you over the. I got to turn it up so they can hear me. Okay, what we're gonna do is Bob, can you stay over another hour?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. Then we're gonna have Dr. Judy Mikovits in the third hour. That'd be awesome. But we don't have any of the streaming or the break stuff. So, sorry, get over. But we'll be right back in the next hour. Hang out, man. It's going to be more fun. We got to get into more activism and stuff. We're doing. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember.
I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines.
Yeah.
And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We are not afraid! Because we... You know, that's one thing. It's like, you know, Bob Anderson is on, hang out with us for the next hour. He's a big trekking across Mount whatever the heck, Rainier of glacier ice crampon kind of, you know, scary stuff. You know, and you don't do that if you're afraid. I mean, you're relatively concerned, but you're prepped, and you know what to expect, and you know what you're going to do. And he and Lon do show me some pictures, and I'm going, hell no. Hell no. That's another thing. What prompted you to start doing trekking across the freaking frozen glacier crap anyway? Where'd that come from?
We spent a lot of time up in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington, and if you spend any time in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington and see those mountains, you can't help but want to go do that kind of stuff because, I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing place.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the actual... trekking across ice crevices and crampon doing the spiky shoe thing of kind of, did you have any kind of near misses?
Well, of course. Yes, but you know, that's a, you know, that's what makes it fun or makes it, you know, exciting. As a young man, you do those kind of crazy things.
I know. I have a couple of, you know, I'm going, see, I probably should have died on that one, almost that one. That would have been really crippling, that one. And you go, how the hell did we make it, man? The fear of death will freaking motivate you to get your crap straight. And as you get older, you know, one, you know what your body's capable of. But the biggest thing is you weigh risk. Okay, I already done it. I got the confidence. I'm good. And then when you have sons and so on, all right. Let me tell you what I didn't do that you should do to save your life and make sure you got, and then you get the prepping stuff and what goes in your bug out bag and blah, 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 blah. So when old guys tell you stuff, man, it's because they're the ones that survived.
Exactly.
You know, there's all these other guys that they didn't make it.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, let me tell you about this friend I used to have.
Right. You know. So I'm, you know, one thing I'm telling you, this little Mavair 2, Mavic drone thing, that would have saved my butt on a lot of stuff just to be able to go over the hill and look, you know. And yeah, I tell you, you got the resources to get one for a whole bunch of stuff. I'm voting this, man. This is what I, you know, we've been hoping would come for decades. Wouldn't it be cool if, you know, and you know, it's here now. I'll tell you, they're not free, but man, it's worth it. The we didn't get a chance to talk about jackalope yet. And Bob and I, you know, we went back to Arizona to visit with family and everything, and we weren't sure we were going to be able to go, and we did. Donna and I just took her enclave, and, you know, we left her. It's a Buick SUV thing, and we left it in Arizona, and we got a Jeep to tow because that thing is too nice to tow. And so... we camped in the back of that. That worked out great. It's got like an automatic remote open, close the hatch thing and have mattresses. Hell, man, I could have done this for a bunch of times. So we were there. Bob had his camper trailer that he's been customing out over the years of keep making better and stuff and more power, warp speed. And rain harvesting is becoming a thing. And but before we get into that, jackalope was probably busier now than most years. It was at least number one or number two in attendance, and it was spread out all over the place, and it was up in the forest. It was busy everywhere. Everybody's going camping, and that is, they're just, they're testing out there, yeah, we can survive and do this. So that was interesting. I think a lot of the other forests, they were shutting down for fire danger, and that was the only one there that you could even have a campfire by the time we got there. According to them. And then, but I wanted to ask Bob, you know, you give a little report on jackalope, but how many people stayed after it was supposed to be over? It was like 2 weeks of, you know, jackalope. And I think, they might just permanently be up there. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I stayed for the week after, you know. I mean, they had the first week, and then, you know, it was kind of quiet, because it was like a week long this year instead of just the weekend. And the second weekend, there was actually, you know, during the week, a certain amount of people filtered out and people filtered in. It stayed pretty constant. It was, I'd say, number one for attendance. It was, you know, we've been going to every one of them. And this one was definitely, you know, whether it was because of the Rona, had a bunch of other, you know, activist kind of freedom anarchist kind of things shut down other places, so that was the only one, or you know, that people just really wanted to come because it was, you know, pimped really well this time, or, you know, don't know, but there was a lot of people, way more than I've ever seen. And it was cool. I mean, everybody was pretty reasonable about where it was, or at least, you know, I heard some grumblings about the music late at night and, you know, that kind of stuff.
And we warned everybody, you don't want to be downtown 3 in the morning, the thump, thump, thump. You better go down the road a little bit or something, which is what we did.
That's why I call it the suburbs, man. I moved out of the city center because city center's noisy and because like city centers are. And
yeah, damn Portland.
Yeah, and I moved on out into the suburbs, and, you know, I like it. I don't mind the walk or ride the, you know, the quad up to, you know, go downtown and visit and see what's going on, but when I need to get out of the thump thump music or, you know, the crowd, I just go back to the campground out, you know, down the road a little bit. And if it keeps getting bigger, I was telling my boys, you know, they need to start like a Jackalope Uber or something. We'll take the, you know, the four-wheeler up there, and they can just, you know, people can just call you or text you, or we'll figure out a way that, and you can just give people rides. You know, they want to be downtown, go camp a mile down the road. We'll just, you know, we'll just come get you and run a Jackalope Uber for, you know, whatever barter, crypto, silver, whatever exchange, you know, free ride for a silver dime kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it'll keep. Yeah, and that's one thing. A lot of people didn't know, in the Dennis and Karen, they're probably, at least in their 60s, you know, they're, you know, not young guys, you know, they're, you know, mature, kind of not seen as a threat by the man. And they were out there going, they saw a ranger, and they're going, where's, we missed it. Baca Meadows around here. So, oh yeah, it's back there. And you go, but I wouldn't go back there. There are some anti-government types back there. And they're, you know, ooh, that's what I was looking for, you know? So they said, but we were told not to go back there. And they haven't been any problem over the years. You know, they're not a problem. But we were told by our head guy not to go back there. And
but
I'm going.
I don't believe anybody went back there the whole week I was there. I saw them go down the main road a couple of times early on. And then after that, I never saw
them. Rangers or sheriff or what?
Yeah, all of the above.
Yeah.
Didn't see anybody back
there. Do not go into the Baca. Because I knew they knew, because what's happened before is they go and they be stupid and they get, you know, videotaped. And they just, you know, it's not worth it. Just, you know, just leave them alone. They haven't done anything.
Yeah, there's nobody really doing anything back there other than just hanging out. So there's, you know, there's no reason to go back there. I guess if, you know, somebody needed help, we'd call them or something. But, you know, there's no need to go back there just
to
show
them. You know, there was one guy that, he had mental issues, you know, a few years ago. And he was not right in the head to begin with. And I think he had some psychedelics or he was off his meds or something. And we wound up, me and Dr. Frank and Tarzan Keith, wound up taking him to the fire station and dropping off his car. I think it was, who was it? It was one of the guys that drove his vehicle. We just, and Alma impounded his dog at, you know, some pet thing. And eventually they all got together and worked it out. But we just dropped everything out the fire station. I don't know. We found him mumbling in the forest. Peace out, you know, kind of, you know, there. And Bob was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Leave him in the forest, man.
You know, it's definitely, you know, I'm the moon is a harsh mistress kind of, you know, hey, he got himself there. Yeah, he can just deal with it. You know, it's like,
I know. Somebody plays grandpa. I just like, you know, but it was, you know, it was a couple of day thing. So I'm fine. All right, fine. We just bite the bullet. You know, whatever. But, there's always a guy. There's always that one guy. You got to be, what are you going to do about the one guy?
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Mr. Robert Anderson. Mr. Anderson. Okay, what we're going to do is Donna's putting up, she found and gotten, getting to it, the rain harvesting mechanism. I haven't even looked at it. I haven't seen it. But you go into today's archive, and how long, Donna? 3 minutes. And 3 minutes before the end of the segment, she'll have it up. So you go into Declare Your Independence with Ernest. You go to freedomsphoenix.com at the top right. You have Declare Your Independence with ErnestHancock.com. There's a link there. You just go to that. And then you look at today's show or on Freedom's Phoenix at near the top up there. You'll see today's show. And in 3 minutes, you click on that, and you'll see the pictures that Bob sent her, you know, that we can see his rain harvesting. Now, he wanted to test it. There's a – it's called the Dream – Green Dream Project in Cochise County, which is southeastern Arizona. They're out in the Loon Prairie. And what I did not know is that Cochise County, until recently, you know, they're trying to change it now, is that you can get a permit to not have to get any more permits. I don't know what the hell that's about. But they are able to, on your land, you do whatever you want. They got like 40 acres or something. They're just building it. They get an RV out there, and they're just making it go work. So one of the things, of course, is rain. You know, I mean, water. Well, it's certainly in the monsoon, which is about now, it goes from like beginning of August to mid-September or something, you could get a year's worth of rain if you could store it. So what they're doing is they created big cisterns and big storage areas, and then the roosts and their stable and the pole barn of kind of, you know, and they harvest the rainwater because when it, you know, when it's a raining, you need to be collecting. Well, Bob is inspired by this, how we know him. We got two domes for them that Bob and his sons are going to go down when it gets cooler and put up for them and have them do some stuff with some aircrete, and I might get them a foam generator for them to experiment with, you know, one less thing I got to do. Adam Kokesh has the dome manufacturing thing, and he communicated with me last few days is that he's going to do some concrete. I'll get you the foam generator if you'll play with this aircrete thing, you know, and okay, you know, I'll talk to him later today and see what we can do. Because I already know what I want to try and what I want to do. I just don't have the place and time right now, but a year from now I will. If I get these guys doing this stuff, then that's a lot of, you know, experience and stuff I learned I don't have to do. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of YouTubes and all that. I have them watch it and they can do it. Well, Bob was his place. He has a well there. He's totally off-grid, got electric, this, that, generators, if he needs it. You know, he's got everything, sewer, his own septic, his own well, his own satellite communications, internet. And he's all off-grid for a decade and a half. Now, but he could use more water. He can't produce enough water to do, like, orchards and, you know, trees and all that kind of stuff because he's kind of up on a slope of this. There's a bunch of water down there, but he'd have to go a lot deeper and so on. So he's did the calculation in his head of how much he needs a rain harvest to do what he wants to do. Go through that with the audience and tell them what's up and what built up to your experiment and go.
Yeah, well, the whole idea is, you know, in the past, being up at Jackalope, you know, they get the monsoon rains up there almost every day. And which is why we go up and do it up there, because it's cool and not in the middle of the molten lead valley down
and
there.
And anarchists may not cause a forest fire.
Yeah. And so in the past, water's always been an issue because you got to bring your own water in and, you know, for your potable water and showers and dishwashing and stuff. And I was planning on spending some time up there. I mean, you know, if you obey the rules, you're only supposed to be, you know, 14 days. And I spent just 14 days up there, but you know, that's a lot of water, and I had people coming and using, you know, cooking and showering and visiting and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it all would cut into your water, and a lot of times people would make trips into town to go get more water. Well, I didn't want to have to do that. And we talked about it last year, was I was going to set up and do a little experiment with rain harvesting, see if I could harvest enough water to offset some of the uses that I had to let me stay in the forest longer, because I've got energy is fine. I've got plenty of, you know, the solar does fine. I never run out of electricity. I've got communications because I got my little, you know, cell phone booster thing. And I got plenty of propane for the refrigerator. And, I mean, short of food. Water's the biggest thing I got to worry about. So I got to set up a little tarp and some T-poles and just doing an experiment to see how much water I could really collect. And it was kind of funny because we actually didn't have that much rain up there this year. We had one really good rainstorm, and I managed to collect
hailstorm.
The hailstorm between the water that I collected in my little setup and the setup that, you know, Lon had brought a tarp up just to kind of have a place to dry to sit under. And we just, as we were catching the water coming off of that, I collected over 35 gallons of water, and that did me for the rest of the time I was up there. I washed my dishes with it. I flushed my toilet with it. You know, I basically used the potable water that
I had on
board.
35 gallons. It was like a mini barrel you filled up, and that was done in how long?
Oh, I mean, 20 minutes of storm.
I mean, you know, woohoo! If you can catch it, it's there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a pretty torrential downpour, like, say, hail and rain. And that water lasted me. I poured water out when I left. So, I mean, I didn't need to have, extended my stay. I could have easily spent another week and not been worried about water at all.
Now, the only thing is the rainwater that came down, because you had tarps, you know, strung between trees and all that kind of stuff. It was discolored a little bit because of the pollen on the trees, you know, from the pine, whatever the hell, you know, but that was just for flushing and washing. It was still clean. You could have filtered it through a water, or hell, you could have just drank it. I mean, you know, it's not that big a deal.
Right, right. Yeah, I've drank worse, trust me.
Right.
And, you know, they got a cure for that. And so, yeah, with some filtering, and like, say, the tarp we had set up under the trees just to, you know, keep the rain off of us, and we just indirectly were catching water off it because it was there. But the water that I collected out in the meadow on my little setup that I had, that water was clean. I mean, I could have, you know, I could use that easily for showering and, you know, with a little filtering, probably just run it through a Brita filter or something like that. I would have felt comfortable drinking it. So, I mean, bottom line is you could catch enough water up there to probably survive it definitely in a normal monsoon year. Like, say, this year, the monsoon is pretty late. They're getting pounded here lately, but it was pretty dry up there even during the week we were up there.
Okay, now I'm looking at an hour or two on today's show. You can see, yeah, just the tarp, and you put up, and you had, you put a little downspout in the middle of it to kind of catch it in the barrel. And you had your rain gauge out there to see how much we did. It's just a 10x10 tarp, you know, in a 5-gallon bucket. I mean, there's definitely not sophisticated about this thing. Then you had another barrel to kind of pour it into when they filled up, and that was it. So, but you're wanting to do something, get all sophisticated on your property out there in the Lone Prairie Desert, and tell us what you're planning.
Yeah, I want to build like a little, you know, like say 10x20 rammed earth shed building, whatever, just to do some experiments with it. I'm going to put solar panels on the roof, I want to see if I can build a little autonomous building, and I'm going to get some indoor outdoor thermometers and kind of take some readings during the cold of the winter and the warm of the summer, and just to see just, okay, like, you know, could you live here completely? I mean, really, really off grid. Because, I mean, you know, my place is off grid, but I still have cooling oil delivered, you know, during the summertime and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I have some outside energy brought in. But
one question while I'm thinking of it. You know, you talked about you had enough propane to run your refrigerator. And I'm wondering if that's a, you know, not just an RV thing, do it at home. We're going in the break. They can't hear over the music. But, let me write that down. I want to get this propane thing when you're talking about your off-grid little house and kind of the options we have. We'll talk about it. Mr. Robert Anderson, when we come back just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Mr. Robert Anderson, Mr. Anderson. Okay, this is one thing we wanted to finish up on his rain harvesting and experiment doing his little micro home there. And I'm still doing the dome deal. You know, I'm going to get that done with some aircrete, and it's got all kinds of different reinforcements. I've been doing a lot of research. It's time to do actual application. And we got, I think we'll work it out with Kokesh. He's going to do one the way I want, and then the experiment with it. And this Green Dream guy down in southeastern Arizona, Bob and his sons are going to put up 2 16-foot domes for him to play with and make the we had him on the show, and we talked about this, and that's what's going on. And the thing is, the reason is because I want to have this done, you know, kind of, all right, you know, there's a bunch of stuff I don't have to repeat experiment. We learn, you know, between now and in the next summer when Don and I go back. You know, because I'm probably not wanting to be building in the summer, but I want to get everything ready and have it, and then we get a place or what. And if Donna can find a place that's already semi out in the middle of whatever, and she can get a house that she doesn't have to build, you know, so much the better. But if not, we'd be making one. That's just the way it is. You know, because it looks like the rural areas are becoming popular. People are moving out of the city and saying, Vodka and deals, man. Go with God. And we're over here now. So that's happening. Well, one of the things is in RVs, it's kind of counterintuitive, but you burn propane to make ice. And how that's done is you need a heat source, and there's a heat exchange that happens with the expanded, I think it's ammonia or something that they use or whatever. Anyway,
yeah.
You have a refrigerator that gets cold with the itty-bitty little flame, you know, and it uses a very small amount of propane. How small amount? How much are you going through a 5 gallon for a propane refrigerator, and it's well insulated, could last how long?
That was one of the other things I wanted to kind of check because I've never really quantified it totally. But I didn't go through. I got 20-pound bottles on the RV, and I didn't even go through one bottle while I was up there. And I probably had that fridge keeping stuff cold for, 14, 16, probably about 17 days. I had that refrigerator running, and I didn't even go through a full tank. I haven't gone back and refilled that tank yet, so I don't have a good number for what I used. But I started with full tank, so I could measure what my usage was.
And well, what's it better? I mean, you know, if it was electric, you had a really good efficient electric with some solar, you better off electric or getting one that does all three.
You know, because the sun is free and propane isn't. But I mean, it's you know, again, you know, you're talking much like doing air conditioning. If you're trying to do any kind of major thermal moving exercise with any kind of mechanism that requires energy, it's going to take a little bit. So it would be a pretty good drain on your fridge. But, I mean, your fridge would be a pretty good drain
on your fridge. Well, these refrigerators system, now, they have several options. You can do propane, 110, and 12-volt. Now, the 12-volt, what's the difference? Because I've seen some of these, they call them solar freezers or something like that, and they just operate with a panel, and you got this chest freezer thing out there, you know, doing 12. So what's the difference? How's 12-volt? You know,
well, there's a couple different ways. Like my fridge, when it's on 12 volts, it just has basically a little heating element that takes the place of the flame. So you got this, you know, 12 volt resistance heater. So it's not the most efficient thing. Same with the 110. When it's 110, it just basically is boiling the ammonia with an electric heating element, like a hot water heater. Now, there's also 12 volt stuff that does it with solid state, and I can't remember what they call them. Like Pelletier or something or other or whatever. You know, there's a little, you know, you can basically put electricity to this little chip, kind of piezoelectric kind of whatever, and if you put electricity in, one side gets hot, one side gets cold, and it basically moves.
You know, we did that for the laser. You know, we had tubs of water for the 100-watt laser to cut the templates that Derek did, and it just wasn't a fit. It just get too hot. You know, you got a 100-watt laser cutting, working all day. It just wasn't going to keep up. So he bought and he installed right when we got there for us doing this project, I guess. And he goes, it's just not going to keep up. So he bought one of those things. And it was only $100-something, as I remember. It wasn't that expensive. And it was about the size of, a welder. You know, like you get one of those welders at Harbor Freight. You know, the box is about that size. And it had a 110 went into it. It had two water hoses, and it did what you're talking about. It had a little bit of electricity went in there, and it made, you know, one side of the heat of the plate cold, and it was enough to keep it down below 90-degree water as we ran that thing constantly. And I'm going, wow, that thing is cool. So that was, I'm very interested in that technology. That was something different I hadn't known about.
Yeah, no, it's you look it up. It's solid state. A lot of these, you know, these heating cooling elements, you can buy the little coolers for your car, you plug another cigarette lighter, and it can heat your cup of coffee or keep your Coca-Cola cool, you know.
That's what those are. Okay.
Yeah, they're just solid-state refrigerators.
Solid-state. Damn. Things getting cool, man. Getting cool.
Yeah. Right. It's hard to get super cold temperatures out of them, but they move thermal energy.
Okay, so you have experiment. The idea that you're thinking is like a 10x20, or maybe, you know, 8x32 if you're using sheets of plywood. Or I mean, how are you going to build this?
I'm going to do rammed earth. I'm going to build with 2 foot lifts. I'm going to build probably 6 foot length panels by 2 foot high. Forms for pounding the earth, and then I'm going to leave. Every time I move the panel, I'll probably leave like a little 8-inch gap between them that I'll eventually fill with concrete, so I can tie it all together with a, you know, a header beam around the thing to tie all the walls together with, you know, every 6-8 feet there'll be a concrete pillar. And once I get that done, I'll just put a little door, put a little window in it, and I want to see how cold I can keep it in the summertime.
How thick are you going to do it?
I'm thinking probably about 12 inches.
And where, pray tell, are you going to get your dirt?
I live on dirt.
I know. You definitely got enough dirt.
Yeah. Dirt's not going to be the problem.
You know, it kind of is up here. I mean, you're from, you know about the north. I mean, you'd have to, I don't know how to help you, but in the desert, it's perfect dirt for rammed earth. I mean, it's just sitting there ready for you.
Yeah, and that's why you see a lot of adobe and rammed earth buildings. You know, you look to the Native Americans because they knew what they used the building materials there at hand, and usually they were pretty good at where they were building. You know, I mean, the cliff dwellers lived on the south side of the hills, and dirt homes that they pounded with adobe, and they managed to squeak out a living. So I want to see just what a rammed earth building can.
How high a ceiling? You know, that has a lot to do it. For me, that claustrophobic thing is, I don't dig this 6-foot ceiling thing, man. I mean, how high are you going to go?
I'm not nearly as claustrophobic as you, because the higher you go, the more internal volume you got to keep cool or warm. So, I mean, there was a reason they built, the pioneers built their cabins to be just, kind of slouchied over when you're
ripping.
I'm not going to make it quite that low, but I'm not going to go much higher than 6.5 feet, so that you can go in there without bumping your head. But the idea is to see, could you, or how well with modern understanding of, the thermal needs of a building, can you build a building that can keep it?
Okay, now here's a good question. A lot of people don't know. How in the desert, when it's 100 billion degrees, how many nights are you needing to heat your area?
I would probably, you gotta, or you just would be nice to.
It'd be nice to. Probably at least, 4 or 5 months out of the year?
Yeah, 4 or 5 months. Take the chill of the house off before you go to bed, 10 o'clock, between 10 and 5 in the morning.
Yeah,
nice.
No, Donna definitely is a heat me, because she doesn't dig it, So she doesn't like being cold. But so it's 4 or 5 months out of the year. That was the one thing that we learned from Marco Santi up there, which is Paolo Soleri, architect of Central Command of whatever. They said in their little autonomous community, kind of socialized, whatever, their biggest thing was heating. Cooling, they have big mass of, in the dirt and concrete and so on, and they just had a pool. And cooling was not as big a thing as you would think. It was heating. They're going, we spend way more energy and time trying to heat ourselves. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, heating, cooling, electrical, refrigeration, all the stuff. Can you get cold air from the ground? Bob's going to find out everything. If it pleases the crown, you're allowed to do what you want on your own freaking property. We'll find out when we come back.
It's quiet.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Mr. Robert Anderson. Okay, this is what we want to talk about real quick in this last segment here. There's water, power, communication, food, and then robots that do everything for you. Okay? Now, the first thing is all of these can be addressed in the well planning of the dwelling to begin with. That's what all these earth ships are about and so on. So what Bob wants to do is he just wants to do a rammed earth, which is you'll take what are you going to use for forms? 2x12s or 5/8 plywood or 3/4 inch or what?
I'll probably make the forms out of 3/4 inch plywood, and I'll get some of the screw wood clamps that you put on the black pipe, and from what I've seen, they were using 2x10s or 2x12s for the bracing on it while you sit there and ram the earth. And like I say, I'm gonna get myself a little electric jackhammer and with a foot on it, because I ain't sitting there pounding it with a an 8x8 manual tamper. I'm gonna tamp the earth. I'm just gonna build this little. It's a test home kind of thing, or shed or whatever.
Yeah. Where's your permit?
I can do some math. It won't be permanent. I can just knock it over because it's made of dirt.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a permit.
Of course I am. You know, I'm a good little doobie. It's of course I will.
Right. So you go ahead and what kind of floor are you going to have it be?
I'm probably just dirt floor to start with. I'm not going to do anything. Mostly I want to do experiments. I get some indoor outdoor thermometers so I can see exactly, what the inside temperature compared to the outside temperature is. Kind of like what I was doing back in Boston with the miners. I'm a big math spreadsheet. Statistical, if you really want to.
He's got numbers. Bob doesn't think he knows. He knows. That's one thing we did. We took back four S9 miners to put in his basement, and that freaking heated that whole house and dried it out, man.
Yeah, we need to do that one of these days. We'll talk about all that because I still haven't crunched all those numbers from the spreadsheet I did when I was back there. But it was pretty interesting, the numbers that came up. I don't want to sidetrack it, but yeah. Up to a certain how freezing cold it gets outside, those four miners would keep that house warm.
And that was a big two-story with a basement house. You know, this is another thing is that, if you had solar a little extra to run, I don't know, what is it? It was 15 amps or something for those, 12 amps, whatever it was on running those miners. One miner would definitely heat your thing. You'd have to vent some heat, because damn.
Oh, yeah. The biggest thing I found with the miners using them for heat is just the noise. We'd be sitting upstairs, you could hear them like, whoa, winding up like a jet engine.
Probably have it on the outside. Well, the other thing I wanted to do before we run out of time, you did one on the south facing of your home 1 year. I remember you built your little studio apartment. Well, it was a one-bedroom, kind of a garage thing that you did. And it was warm, and it's cold. In the desert, it gets freaking cold, man. I mean, when it's desert and it's low humidity and it's, 20-whatever degrees, it's freaking cold. And we walked in to this apartment that he had built, and it was warm. I'm like, all right, how'd you do this? Tell him how you did it and what you might do with this one.
Yeah, I just took a 4x8 frame out of those metal 2x4 things you can buy, the steel 2x4s, and I insulated the backside, and I put that corrugated, ridged, clear
polycarbonate
greenhouse glazing on it on one side, put some metal inside of it, painted it black, and just ran warm air with a little a little solar powered DC fan through it, and it, as long as the sun's shining, it was generating some heat, and like I say, getting heat in my little building thing is not going to be an issue. I'll have one window facing south, and half the time I'll have to keep it shaded because it'll just bake it out of the building.
Yeah, see, doing this, you plant, because that really surprised me, is that one 4x8, and it was just a 4x8, you get that foam, styrofoam, one side reflective, whatever the heck on it, and you put that on the back. You use those 2x4s that you do in commercial construction that are, made of the steel 2x4s, whatever they are, and you just made this rectangle with that polycarbonate sheet on the front, and you put you use some of that foam stuff to make like a channel, like a maze the air went through, and then on one end he had a CPU fan that was connected to a solar panel, so if the sun was shining, it moved air. If it went behind a cloud or it was a little bit less, it goes slower, or the sun went down, it wouldn't blow cold air. So it was automatic. You just sat there and the sun was shining, it did, and you did say the same kind of thing, but with water for an exchange for your fish on your aquaponic thing. So, Bob's been experimenting on this, and that generated enough heat that it, what was that thing? 800 square feet or something? 600 square feet, that building?
Yeah, about like that. I think it's whatever 25 by 25 is.
4x8 sheet heated that thing in Arizona. I'm telling you, man, this is energy is not going to be the thing. Okay, so we got, power for heating. You have solar panels you can put on top. Hell, the amount of roof space you'd have on that would be about the size of all your solar panels you have now running your whole house for 15 years.
Right. Yeah, it's and you know what else I'm going to use for heating? I'm going to put a rocket stove in, and I'm going to burn all the junk mail I get delivered. So basically the post office is going to heat the place.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so you have rocket stove technology is kind of cool, too.
Yeah, we saw that cool metal one. Remember that
I
one?
I know. I think I ordered one.
Yeah, no, they're a thing, man.
So rocket stoves are just real efficient use of, it's just, there's all this heat that goes away that if you could capture that, make it a little combustion area and pipe it through what you need to heat, it's fine. That's not, the Africa tribes need those, and I think they probably got them. They're called furnaces. But the, for forging, whatever they do. So, see what's there. We got solar generation. What about your storage? What do you think you're going to do?
For energy storage? Yeah. I'll probably do a fairly small, probably lithium iron phosphate battery bank just to kind of act like an energy capacitor and maybe run a few LEDs night so you could sit there and go, yes, I have, much like a little African village, I have enough LED light that I can actually have a couple hours of relaxed time to read a book or something like that without it being pitch black in there.
So lithium iron phosphate is kind of your favorite now, but, and we have four of them, the Battleborns in the Love Bus, but they're cool. They're pretty light, and they just and you can buy for a fraction of the cost. You can buy the cells, and Bob's Mr. Handyman can freaking wire everything up anyway, and you can get them a lot cheaper. But I tell you, man, new technology is coming really fast.
Yep, as soon as I can buy it.
As soon as I can buy it, that's Bob. He goes, yeah, can I buy it? I can buy that. All right, communication, satellite, cell, radio, all the above, what?
Yeah, well, it'll be the same thing I have here. It's just basically, I have, cell phones and satellite internet, and that does me just fine.
Okay, food. You're going to, expand or keep what you got in aquaponics, raised beds? What are you doing with food?
I'm going to get real serious about, years ago I got real serious when I had the whole family living out here. But, this last little pandemic-y, we all went in, locked the gate, and hung out. We were fine here. We hardly knew anything was going on. But I started getting, serious about gardening. But we were already so far into the growing season that it, went into the summer. And plants don't grow here in the summer very well. But, I'm going to get serious about it this fall. I got a little rototiller, and I'm going to till up the gardens because I haven't used them in a few years. But I really got busy amending the soils, knowing there was a probability that I, you might need to grow a little food on your own.
Okay, before we run out of time, one of the other things is that it was orchard. You have water there, and if you're doing the harvesting, you actually do trees. So this is one of the things about the water rain harvesting is so that you could grow even more food. Tell me about what you're going to do with this building rain harvesting.
Well, the rain, mostly I'm going to collect all the rain in some IBC totes that I'm going to put on one of the walls of the building under a little bit of a little shade roof to increase my square footage for collection. And I'm just going to monitor how much water I collect out of it. I'll probably use the water for stuff. I won't just throw it away. But mostly it's just to get a number. Okay, what do I really collect in a year? And could that water sustain you? Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm going to do. Because, I got the well, and I use other big tanks that I have out here that I pump up during the wintertime. So I have plenty of water storage. But what I collect off the building, I'm going to keep separate just so I can, again, run the numbers just to go, how much water can one collect, and will that be able to sustain you? At how much gallons a day would you be able to get out?
We're talking over the music now, but I tell you, Bob will know the number on all this stuff. I will rip off Bob's numbers, and then that's what I always do. I always buy the same 3D printer, the same crap. You fix it out, and then pit mine out. So this is what we're going to do. This is over the next year. We can see the motivation for being able to do this. Then we do it, and we share. That's what's going to happen. In Arizona, IA, and around the.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
DeClaire, your independent to me, Ernest Hancock, here in Sault Ste. Marie, locks of the Great Lakes between Superior and Huron, Lake Michigan. It's kind of a river that goes between two. We're going to get a geography lesson when we do the video. I got some drone footage. Oh, we're talking to Dr. Judy Mikovits. Man, if she ain't everywhere. You know, this all of a sudden now, you know, we used to be the only, you know, we talk to her on a regular basis and everything. Now everybody does, and we got to get in line. I'm like, you know, which is fine. You know, I try not to bother you too much, and we're kind of, you know, strung out, and a lot of times we don't have the communication we usually do. But it's got to the point to where Dr. Judy Mikovits, man, she's tippy-top on the list of. And I haven't seen... They really tried early on to demonize you and whatever you say sucks and yada, yada, yada. Not so much. I mean, that didn't last very long. The more attention they gave you, the worse it got for them. How's that working out for you now?
Yeah, ever since Plandemic Indoctrination came out on the 18th, last week, all the attention has shifted, and I thank him for it, to that lovely Dr. David Martin at UVA, who's just burying them. So Mickey Willis and Dr. David Martin are going on Dell Big Tree. They were on the High Wire last week, thehighwire.com. Mickey Willis was back the next day at LondonReal.tv with Brian Rose on August 19th. Amazing interview that day. I didn't know a lot of this stuff, and it starts to show you. And then David Martin was on Del Big Tree show. Mickey Willis was on Del Big Tree show. So yeah, the word's getting out there, and that's the good news about indoctrination. I was only in it for about 10 minutes, and then it was And so that's fabulous, that and everybody's like, and Dr. David Martin, what he's been saying, just impeccable. He goes into such great details on the patents and how the patents were illegal, and that beautiful part of, okay, if it's natural, you can't have a patent, and if it's manufactured, you know, your patent was illegal, and so it just shows, you know, in my naivete, me saying, yeah, it's manufactured because you grew it, you manufactured it in the Vero monkey kidney cells from Fort Detrick. And everybody's like, well, Judy, you can buy that Vero monkey kidney cell anywhere. And it's like, yeah, why don't you? Oh, because you need the ones that have been cultured with bat tissues and have a few gamma retroviruses. XMRBs, where the M is monkey, not meese, not mice. So it's great. It's really been fabulous the last week.
One thing I tell you, Dr. Judy, it surprised me. It didn't surprise me. I'm surprised that it got out, was the fact that they talk about the India and all the things in Africa that has happened with Gates and what they were doing and the damage that was done and the resistance from ministries and countries and departments of, to the point that, you know, Gates shall never show his freaking shadow in India again kind of stuff. They had all kinds of different investigations. And then, you know, when Mickey goes back doing Plandemic, the movie, you know, knowing this stuff, going back for footage, it had all been wiped off the internet. Well, we're talking about Microsoft, Bill Gates here. Of course they know how to whatever. And right. So they had to go back to India. They had to actually talk to the legislators and the department heads and the yada, 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 and reconstruct a lot of this stuff and get the old video and everything to put in, because they have stricken it, because India is an English-speaking country. And, right. You know, or also English. And so they have all this stuff in English. And it was, they did their best to scrub history of it, of what they did.
Right, absolutely. And they scrubbed the history of that. Other things in India, so but you can still find it with smart people who know the internet and who've been there, like David Martin, Dr. David Martin, and this is the thing, they can't escape, just like they couldn't escape with the XMRVs, you know, which is You know, because, you know, smart people know and save screenshots, and we've got things like way back, and we've got a hard drive with all of these things that go all the way back to the 80s. So they thought they got away with it, and that's the big gotcha, you know, the plague of corruption. That's why Plague of Corruption's a New York Times bestseller, and it's waking up doctors everywhere, and the people are like, yeah, I saw that once, and people are coming to me. People are coming to me 24/7, and good people, good doctors, and saying, here's a piece of the puzzle. Here's the piece of the puzzle. You know, and we're focused on solutions. We're focused on, you know, they're out to kill the XMRV infected, you know, the vaccine injured, the HIV, you know, the masks, the methods, you know, that we'll kill and forever cover up those they injured with these contaminated vaccines of all kinds. And so we're doing our best. Our focus is totally on, you know, get therapeutics and get this information. Teach people how to use hydroxychloroquine. Teach people how to use chlorine dioxide, UV, ultraviolet radiation, HBOT, you know, of blood. So and doctors are coming to me as you guess, 24/7 with solutions and helping me a great deal.
You know, this is, there's so many treatments that have been proven to be better, and, you know, and it's not just for this. What's happened is you're talking a coronavirus, which is like common cold, flu, and whatever the hell. They do all these different treatments for this. They're going to cure a bunch of stuff, and then what happens?
Well, and that's the point, chronic Lyme. So the doctors are looking at it and say, yeah, we got this. We got ivermectin, you know, and all these things are low dose. Hydroxychloroquine, the half-life is 22 days. So as a preventative strategy, we're taking a pill a month. We're telling everybody, take a pill a month along with a multivitamin. We got to go back out and buy our vitamins you know, and get your zinc, get your minerals, and hey, you'll be fine. So we're, you know, and if we can wake people up enough to not get a flu shot, because that's how they drove the first pandemic, and now they're mandating it everywhere, even for school, for kids on Zoom computer classes. You have to get your flu shot or you can't go to UCLA on your computer. Well, we know that has nothing to do with your health, and we know the flu shot drove the coronavirus infection, COVID, SARS-CoV-2 in the first place, and we also know COVID-19 is not the coronavirus. The common cold. It's the coronavirus plus the XMRVs plus the GMOs plus the glyphosates plus the bad food plus the masks plus the flu shots. You know, we know what COVID-19 is. It's a covert operation to force everybody. Yeah, that's what COVID means. covert operation for vaccine ID. So they can chip you. They can chip you all. You know,
is that what's coming? I mean, you look at here's a few things. The one thing that we're hitting on now, because it's easy, is the mask. You know, that's just stupid. So we're you know, we're going into break. They can't hear you over the music, so I gotta let you know that we're going in. We'll be back in 4:15 from right now. Dr. Judy's going to explain everything over the next hour, but we don't have the, you know, the stream during the break, man. We're gonna cure the planet during the break, and then we'll tell you about it when we come back. We'll be back in just a little bit.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Dr. Judy Mikovits. Oh, she's been a busy now. Everybody want to talk to Dr. Judy. Or a lot of them don't. They're just, oh, hell no. She's been, you know, told they've been full of crap all this time. And she could not be browbeaten, peer pressured out of it. That was the one thing that so many people are susceptible to. It's called gaslighting. It's like, you know, do you really, I mean, there's a long story behind where it comes from, a play that keep turning the gaslight down, trying to make a woman feel like she was crazy, that, you know, yada, yada, yada. And that what they do is they'll go and they'll say, do you really? I can't believe you believe that. Oh, my. Well, to ask them why they believe what they believe. They don't got an answer. They don't care. They're just trying to, you know, put fear, uncertainty, and doubt in your mind. And then they're able to do that to an entire culture, entire country, entire planet, because they have positions of authority and they got a stethoscope around their neck wearing a white lab coat and a government shiny badge of something. And they go and they say, you know, and they got a really good haircut and a shiny tie, and they say, no, this is what we think, and anybody that doesn't think this is crazy and you're wrong. And one of the only people during all the building up to this, the vaccine thing, what they were doing, food, chemicals, what, is Dr. Judy going, look, I'll tell you exactly what's going on. And she has been telling on our show for 4 or 5 years. We've had hundreds in the plural of shows that we regularly have done with Dr. Judy, because we all over here and her knew this was coming. Sooner or later, it always comes out. Now that it has in the science and the other doctors and other countries, and then we find out that when you're doing Plandemic the movie, the first and second installment that we've gotten exposed to, what happened is that this has been going around the world, and other countries have been suing, filing, hell, even charges, or thou shalt not ever come back, to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the WHO, and the UN, and all of these, and it's been coming around reducing population. This is a religion with some of these people, and they are evil sons of bitches, where they got pointy fang, blood-dripping fangs, and pointy, pale, pointy horn people. I mean, it is bad. So now, who's standing there that they couldn't take out because she keeps moving around and yakety-yakety-yakety. Now it's where, if you're going to be, and that's what I explained to Dr. Judy. I go, look, I need to keep you on top of the list. It's safer there. We need to keep you out in the open on this a lot. Well, now, I think you're out there enough now. What do you think? You got a new book, The Corruption, Plague of Corruption. How's that book doing?
It's a New York Times bestseller. It's been that way since within 2 weeks of when it was published, April 14th, probably thanks to Plandemic, which first came out, the part one came out May 4th. And so it's still a New York Times bestseller. You're right. It's doing well, and you know, economically, it doesn't matter. It's, we don't make a lot of money, you know. And the point of everything is educate the doctors. So I think it's doing fabulously, because I said doctors are reading it, and that was the intended audience. So the patients. So we tell everybody. Even, and the mask book was just published last week as well. The case against the mask: 10 reasons why mask use should be limited. And it's more than just stupid, it's dangerous. And so I'm, you know, it's driving the disease. It's killing autistic kids. They can die in their sleep of seizure activity. If they even wear a mask 5 minutes a day, they can drive that neuroinflammatory process. Certainly anybody with the lung disease, you can drive the inflammatory process in the lungs. You deplete your type 1 interferons, you deplete your T cell responses that are critical for responding and turning off the flame. Remember, it's the inflammation, it's not the infection. So this is the masks are driving the activation of the infection from within. It causes stress. You turn on the pineal gland. So one of the things the PCR detects is the expression not only of gamma retroviruses, but chromosome 8. And that is, you know, they go up the nasal cavity so far, is big. They look at on chromosome 8 is a transporter called vesicular monoamine transporter. And it's the God gene. It's on the pineal gland, and the pineal gland produces melatonin, you know, serotonin, a calming derived hormone. So when you're under stress, that gene goes on, and that's why, you know, 100% of the people in the masks are PCR positive, and yet none of them are sick because they're under stress, and they're responding to the stress by producing more melatonin, which, you know, is actually a therapy for the XMRVs, for the HIVs, part of a therapy along with the cannabis, everything we've known and everything we've been saying. So they know this. They know, and microwave radiation slows the ability of this particular transporter. So the radiation and the 5G and the microwave, you know, everything that we know that's driving the disease has little to do with the SARS-CoV and infection. Everyone under stress will express that gene, will be caused positive. Oh, a second wave of infection. It's not infection at all. You just woke up everything they injected in those needles, as I keep saying, in infection by injection in that flu shot. So they keep that mask on you, you know, and a population where you can, you know, make healthy people. I worry about it. We were watching a TV show, America's Got Talent, and you see all these beautiful kids, the most susceptible, you know, black kids in Compton, you know, exercising, doing their shows, doing extremely strenuous routines, all of them in the these masks, they're going to get sick, and they're going to blame them, which is the way it works. And so we've got to get people out of these masks and realizing they're killing you. There's nothing polite about it. They're killing you. They're intentional. They're driving the disease. All the science supports that. Our book shows 10 reasons to support that. And every parent and every person everywhere should walk out their door and say, no more masks. I'm going to breathe air as God intended, because otherwise, you know, we as a country will be done. Because if they can take away your most basic, you know, right to breathe air, you know, then they can inject you with anything
they
want.
Well, they had it in Spaceballs. You got to buy a can of Perrier, you know. You got to do that. You know, that, Donna, we need to have the mask book Amazon put into the third hour. You know, do that right away. So Donna's putting that up there. We got all your other books and everything. We just forgot to put that one in there. So she's going to put the mask book. Now, we had an article up, I think it was yesterday, about the case against wearing the mask that you did. And a gentleman, just out of part of his activism, he'll go to Barnes & Noble, and he will order the books that they have and then have them shipped there. And they refuse to ship your book to that store. They go, the order will be canceled. We are not shipping her book to the store. They are not going to see that we'll ship it to your house, but we're not shipping it to the store because they, them, those said. We'll talk about that in the new book and what's happening in censorship and how we're doing when we come back in just a little bit. Dr. Jude Mikovits in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
With Dr. Judy Mikovits. Yeah, I'm looking for this story. It was a Bolin report. There was a guy that he orders the books that he wants. A lot of times that kind of controversial. It's just a little, you know, it's his little activism thing. He, instead of having them send it to his home, you know, maybe you don't want them sent to his home, screw you. But his real reason is he wants the book clerks there to see the book that he is going to pick up. So it's in their, what do they call it, ISDN number or something, a little barcode deal, that it's on Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble has the book for sale, the Case Against Masks, and by Dr. Judy Mikovits and Kent Heckenlively, and it's there. So he orders it, and he wants it delivered to the store. Well, they made it clear to him. They said, no. We will ship it to you, but if you have it shipped to the store, the order won't be filled. It'll be canceled and suck it because from on high. And now what Dr. Judy is saying is that is considered censorship under some contract or something, and you got the book publisher, you know, they'll ship it through Barnes & Noble to your home. Is that so they can get away from being censored, or do you think they're still censoring by not shipping it to the store?
Oh, I think they're still censoring by not shipping it to the store. We're New York Times best-selling authors, and these stores should be displaying these new releases front and center, especially now, given this is not, it's not about polite. It's about the dangers, you know, of the mask. And so they can't, and this is more ways of censoring Judy Mikovits and Ken Tech and Lively, and stopping America from getting this information so they won't take the
hello?
So they won't, yeah, so the censorship is so that they won't, you know, people won't buy the book, and they won't take the mask off, and then they'll get away with killing a lot of people when they're wearing masks.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
Shot.
They can't have making you wear a mask and you walk in and sitting there on the first table is your case against masks. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, exactly. This is why they bought Newsweek. You know, they get Newsweek, and it was a congresswoman out of Southern California. Newsweek was in heavy debt, and he bought it. Her gazillionaire husband bought it for a dollar. Why? And took on all the debt. It's so that they could have the front page. They put Obama up there all the time and blah, 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 blah. So I'm going, this is exactly why they control publishers. This is why they, you know, want to control newsstands and front pages and magazines and so on. Because as you're walking through the airport, as CNN is playing, which doesn't happen that much anymore. I haven't seen that much CNN at airports anymore. And so as you're doing that, you know, you get the front page and on the front of the New York Times, of we don't want you to see it. So that, well, Donna's found it. She's putting it up, and she's going to tell me when it's on in the third hour of today's archive, and you can see why they don't want it. Now, the cover of this book is, you know, they don't want that in the front of their store as they're making you wear a mask. You know, so this is, man, it's a, I mean, you can see this is a freaking sign.
Right, and they're making the store people wear a mask, and that makes them liable for damages done to those employees. Because the science is out there. They're hurting employees. They can't deny them a job if they don't wear a mask. They can't deny them a job if they have asthma. 50% of our kids have asthma.
Yeah, I'm, you know, and a lot of it's caused by them getting all these shots and so on.
Correct. And so that makes them much more vulnerable, you know, to having permanent harm done to them, even driving cancer. They're a transcription factor called hypoxia-inducible factor alpha. And it's a gene, it's a light switch to turn on driving tumorigenesis, you know, because denying oxygen.
Whoa, man, that's a big, you know, $10
Sorry.
Word. Tumorigenesis, what the hell is
cancer.
That
cancer. Driving the driving cancer. If there's any cancer in your body,
there's a different
yeah.
word for why say cancer. I mean,
cancer.
Seriously.
Sorry.
Hey, where's
I'm
Kent,
still
man?
Some,
can't explain
I'm,
it to me. Well, how's the mask book doing in comparison with the other book, Plague of Corruption?
Well, I don't actually know because it just came out a week ago. And some of the problem is that people that are pre-ordering and ordering it are not getting their books.
Ah.
So they're holding it up. They're holding it up so it doesn't go out there. You know, it's a problem.
Well, and, who's and, holding and, it up? The publisher?
No, the various stores. Another star in Colorado, you know, a person ordered it three times, hasn't seen it yet.
You know, this is exactly what they were talking about in this article. You almost done, Donna? Okay, she's putting she put the mask book up, and now she's doing the article. So
okay, cool.
Refresh, you know, today's
okay,
archive.
Okay, I'll refresh my, okay.
And then you may have to refresh it again after she puts up the article, because we're doing, did you text it to them yet? Okay, she's going as fast as it's done and go. All right.
That's all right. It's fine.
We got it right there. The case against masks at the bottom of the third hour there. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. With Lady Liberty wearing, you know, 10 reasons why masks you should be limited, and it's in the shape of the United States of America over Lady Liberty's face. I don't want that on the front. No. No.
Right. Lady Liberty looking in horror.
Okay. Now refresh again, and you can see the article that they're talking about what Barnes & Noble is doing.
Right,
so,
okay.
All right, so do that. There it is.
Yeah.
Going scorched earth against Barnes & Noble. Something unusual happens when you write a New York Times best-selling book like Plague of Corruption. And it goes, a lot of people come out of the woodwork wanting to congratulate you, and yada, 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 yada. But then he talks about what he actually did. I was advised they could not locate the book by looking up the title and authors. It's not in the database. Then they asked me to provide the ISBN number, and they found the book is listed. Only if you have the ISBN number can you find it. If you put title or author, it doesn't show up in their database. And then they found the book is listed, but then advised me they cannot order the book to ship to the store, any store. They advised that if it were to be ordered to ship to the store for pickup, the order will be canceled. Boom.
Wow.
And you can't even look it up by title or author. I mean, this is what they call on the internet is kind of like shadow banning.
Exactly. So that's why, thank God, we have Johanna. We didn't, Kent's the smart one. He hired her in 2016. And that's what these kinds of agents do. They, you know, publishers look out for their own interests. But this agent looks out for the author's interest because
oh my God.
The publisher makes all the money for doing all the work. And the only way the authors make any money is, their books get into hands and they get speaking engagements. And for us, we don't even care. I could care less about money. And I'm sure Kent feels the same thing. If this book is delayed getting into people's hands, even 2 weeks, a lot of people are going to be hurt by these masks, and they're, going to continue to shut down the economy and drive this flu vaccination. And when people get a flu vaccine and they wear a mask, I can't even tell you how much disease and death we're going to see within weeks of that happening.
Well, it also loses the viral effect to be able to do the saving of a lot of people. That's exactly why these sons of bitches do it. They want to lose that momentum because they're freaking, man, there's a special place. You know what I mean? So they're going to be finding their special place. And if it's at least just mocking them in the grocery store line. I mean, that's what they're using with all this other social pressure BS, making you want to know what happens when it goes the other way. So now, Donna, you need to send it to Joanna. You need to make sure that the link also gets to Kent and Judy of this article, and it's all done. You on it? Boom! Donna's on it. We're getting it. Going into break. We'll be right back. Dr. Judy, Mike, taking care of business. Taking care of business. Oh, up here in Upper Michigan, they need some love up here. They got a governor.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff. For freedom. We got a lot of people like Dr. Judy Mikovits is going to help explain it to us so we're confident and we know, other than what their freaking, the lab coats tell me is what's up. Because do you believe all these guys? Not so much. All right. Now, you go to today's archive in the third hour, and we have... she has a number six entry or something, going scorched earth against Barnes & Noble. And if you click on that link, it has the story on BolinReport.com, and it has the story about him trying to order the book and how they're suppressing even being able to order it to be shipped to your home, but they will not have it shipped to the store. And even though you got two New York Times bestselling books from the same author, hell no, they're not putting this on the front counter of, the case against masks on the front, and nope, not going to darken the door of Barnes & Noble. It ain't happening. They're already in for the man. Well, if you go to order it from Barnes & Noble, you have to have the ISBN number, which is that little barcode number or something. If you go by, like anybody else, if you do title or author, it doesn't show up in their system. They can't even order it for you. But, no, it's there. So Dr. Judy has a representative of the authors that specialize in just this kind of censorship. That we got them the information here. They're going to go get some. All right. So Donna's got that up there in the third hour, have all the links and all the stuff and all the goodies and order the mask and Amazon, and maybe they'll deliver it. I don't know, maybe. Now, one of the other things I've seen, if you look on an image search, Clear Masks Restaurant. So these are like restaurant masks or whatever, and I guess they might even use them for before, because and the reason they have these is because you can hear them. You can communicate. It goes at, like, say, you know, a 70-degree angle from your chin, covers your chin, and goes up past your nose. So you're not, you know, spraying people, or you're not talking.
You're not spitting in the food. You're not contaminating the food. The water droplets aren't an issue that the viruses can be contained in. It's what restaurants have used for forever for food preparation. So this mask should be perfectly legal.
Is it?
It's, I mean, the airlines and you know, the restaurant, my waitresses and waiters, that's how I first saw it at some of my favorite restaurants. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. My husband can hear you. We can see what you're saying. We can see your beautiful smile. You're not going to make any of us sick. We can all go back inside to restaurants and go eat our food. And if we all wear them, then we're not going to make anybody else sick because you cough right on that little plastic thing. And even better, you can clean that with essential oils. You can wipe it with tea tree oil, and you'll kill all kind of bacteria. So almost everything that is in our book, in the case against masks, the chapter against, like the chapter about the backward jet and this thing flowing up and causing eye inflammation, driving uveitis, which is eye inflammatory diseases, and cataracts and things like that when your glasses. So this person is not hurting their eyes. Almost everything we said in our book, the polycarbonate can be washed. It's not PFOA containing, toxic Teflon containing, that you're breathing in and restricting your airflow. It doesn't restrict your airflow. It doesn't restrict your spile from your show. The pictures of I feel alone, let me see your smile.
Exactly.
Here it is.
You can
Here's
see the their face. You could have it open up towards the top, right? It goes up to below your eyes so you can see their eyes. You see their face. You can, you know, understand what the hell most of the time, I can't even understand what the hell people are saying. And even if I do understand them, it's so muffled, I'm going, I'm sorry, I can't understand what you're saying. You know, say it more clearly, louder, something. That mask is pissing me off, you know? So they, this is a solution to that. I mean, you know, not that I'm, you know, advocating having a mass solution, you know, but it certainly is an option that is much more reasonable. But I'm thinking if they don't go for this, there is no reason why they wouldn't, other than not seeing your faces.
Other than a plague of corruption.
Yeah, no, they don't want to see your face. They want
Correct.
You. They want you to be. They want you to be isolated. They want
right.
you to be alone. They want you. It's a psyop.
Right. If these kids were out there on that TV show and we could see them smiling, we could see people singing, here it is in these commercials. You know, why can't we see everybody's face, this little plastic covering? It's perfectly doing the job if how they said the virus spreads is how the virus spreads. Here's the solution that's been used in restaurants because you don't cough, you don't sneeze. You don't sing into this, and you don't get sick. So the only conclusion you can make is they want to make you sick, drive COVID-19, drive disease, and make everybody hate each other. When my waitress showed up in this mask at my favorite restaurant in Carlsbad, I'm like, thank you, I can see your face. When I look at these poor elderly people on canes walking these masks and they can't breathe and it's 100 degrees outside. This is a solution. We're not about hurting people. We're about solutions.
Yeah. No. This is awesome. I'm digging this. You know this.
But the airline said that's not legal. The airline said you can't get on the plane with this. You have to have this mask. It has to cover your eyes. It can't even be a lace mask. You remember when I was advertising my husband's personal favorite, the lace thong? The lace thong doesn't occlude his breathing. I can't quite see what he says, but he's happy in there. So, you know, and so this is, you know, now, oh, you can't wear anything that's lace. It has to be perfectly sealed. This is stupid. And they know it's stupid, and you can't wear that plastic thing. You can't get off that plane. They're pulling these kids off the tarmac. You know, I did a show with Tia Severino on United Intentions a week or so ago, and there was another grandmother on the phone. She literally had to drive the injured child with sensory processing disorders. You know, these kids, it's freaking them out to put this plane on, this mask on, and it's a validated molecular process driven by the same inflammatory response, that IL-6 we've been talking about, the driver, the inflammation, throw gasoline on a fire. These are making these kids sick. These are making these people sick. And these airlines have no legal authority to do this. Neither do the restaurants, neither do the employers, neither does Barnes & Noble. And we've had the lawsuit against Newsom for this, you know, for the deaf community, for the disabled community, for the people with COPD, for the elderly, you know, this and since June 23rd. And so when is the corruption going to end? This mask alone says it has nothing to do with your health. We're looking for solutions. We're looking to comply. We're not anti-mask any more than we're anti-vax. All we want is a safe vax. All we want is a safe mask. We have safe vaccines. They're called type 1 interferons and cannabinoids and hydroxychloroquine. We have preventative strategies which would prevent anybody from getting infected and spread disease. And yet, just like with HIV and XMREs, we won't do it. We, the royal we, the people in charge, we're going to drive you towards the toxic disease. We're going to own you, like Nancy Pelosi in the movie Indoctrination, Plandemic 2. Oh, yeah, just tell them what you told them. Defame them. Send the message. Why does every single TV show have people in masks standing in a commercial in a street 6 feet apart in a mask to go in a furniture store? This is insanity.
Yeah, with the CNN cameraman not wearing a mask. You know, that's a lot of times people, they on the street, and you have guys, you know, doing their own phone videos and going, look, all the crew's not wearing a mask. This is all for show. You know, it's all crap. So, if you go in right now, we just made it. If you go in to it's at the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now, Dr. Judy Mike events, you scroll down to the third hour, and you can see all of the books available, the articles of them trying to do shadow banning of the books at Barnes & Noble. And I just put up the graphic of the, you can see the masks that are available. You just go in there and you can see, well, I thought I did. You know, let me refresh that. And I put it in these clear masks. They're called Clear Mask Restaurant. If you do that, you know, you'll see that you can, search engine, and boom, there it is. It shows you all of these different masks. You order them, get them. I don't know. I don't think they want you to see their face. I don't think it's about you being masked up. I think it's about them controlling you.